Unit 6, the West. The West is the largest of the five regions of the United States. It is a land of contrast, with the wettest and the driest places, and the warmest and the coldest places in the United States. The West also has the country's lowest place and its highest mountains. In fact, the West has more mountains than any other kind of landform. They cross every state in the region. Unit themes: commonality and diversity, conflict and cooperation, continuity and change, interaction within different environments. Unit project: publish a classroom travel magazine. Complete this project as you study Unit 6. Work with your classmates to put together a magazine about places to visit in the West. As you read the unit, take notes about the places you learn about. Also, use books from the library and search the internet to find out more about those places. You will use the information you collect when you and your classmates publish your magazine at the end of the unit. Unit 6 Preview, The West. Set the scene with literature.
Climb Every Mountain by Gail Skroback Hennessy. Terrence Janay had a dream. He wanted to climb a mountain. Not just any mountain, but the highest mountain in North America, Mount McKinley in Alaska. At age 12, in the summer of 1991, Terrence made his dream come true. He became the youngest person ever to reach the summit of Mount McKinley's South Peak, a height of 20,320 feet. "I've been wanting to do this all my life," says Terrence, who lives near the base of Mount McKinley. In fact, both his parents were mountain climbers and guides. His father was the first person to climb Mount McKinley in the winter. When Terrence was just a baby, he climbed partway up the tallest mountain in the world, Mount Everest. Strapped to a Sherpa's back, he traveled with his mother to a camp on the side of Mount Everest in Nepal. Sherpas are highly skilled mountain climbers who live at the base of the Himalayan mountains. Terrence's father, Ray, was finishing his climb to the top of the mountain. Terrence and his mother were supposed to greet Ray on his way down. It was to be a joyous reunion. But it never happened. Ray Janay was killed on a treacherous peak. When a friend told the family the tragic news, he looked over at baby Terrence. The man promised that someday, when Terrence was ready, he would take Terrence to the mountain his father loved. Together they would climb Mount McKinley. On June 5, 1991, Terrence and six other members of his expedition flew to the base camp of Mount McKinley. "From there, we traveled on skis to about 10,000 feet, where we cached, labeled and left, our skis," Terrence recalls. "Then we traveled with crampons through snow and ice." Crampons are spikes made of steel that attach to the bottom of a boot to give traction. Terrence lived through extreme heat during the day. At night, temperatures plummeted to 20 degrees below zero. The climb wasn't just uncomfortable, it was also dangerous. Terrence had to be alert at all times. A slip while crossing a crevasse, a deep hole in a glacier, would mean almost certain death. Once, an avalanche crashed down the slope, barely missing Terrence's camp. "It wasn't scary, most of the time," says Terrence, "but I kept thinking, I can't wait till I reach the summit." It took days of hard work to reach the top. The expedition climbed 5 or more hours a day before setting up camp. But once the climbing was done for the day, the climbers still had plenty of work to do. Terrence helped set up the tents. He helped make the outhouse. He gathered snow to be boiled into water for drinking and cooking. "We had freeze-dried foods and lots of pasta to eat," Terrence remembers. But life in camp wasn't all work and no play. About 16,000 feet up the side of the mountain, Terrace and his fellow climbers had a great food fight. Finally, after 17 days of climbing, Terrace reached 20,320 feet, the top of Mount McKinley. "I could see lots of different mountain ranges and stuff," says Terrace. He even spoke to his mother over a CB radio, waving to her as she flew overhead in an airplane.
Chapter 12, The Western Mountains. How glorious a greeting the sun gives the mountains. To behold this alone is worth the pains of any excursion 1,000 times over. John Muir on Seeing the Sierra Nevada in California, 1894. Lesson 1, Focus. How are mountains similar, and in what ways are mountains different? Main idea, as you read this lesson, compare and contrast the different mountain ranges in the United States. Vocabulary: lava, volcano, slope, continental divide, timberline. Mountains old and new. In a way, mountains have a lifetime. They form, they grow older, and they wear down. Some of these changes are so slow that they are hard to see. Others, however, can be quick and violent. Mountains form. In 1943, a farmer in western Mexico heard a strange noise coming from his cornfield. He later recalled, "I heard a noise like thunder in a rainstorm, but I couldn't explain it, for the sky above was clear. I turned to speak to my wife when I saw the ground had swelled 2 meters, 7 feet, and a kind of smoke, gray like ashes, began to rise up with a loud hiss." The next day, the farmer returned to find a mound 30 feet, 9 meters high. The mound was growing larger by the minute as it spit out fire, ashes, and lava. Lava is hot, melted rock that comes from a volcano. A volcano is an opening in the earth's surface out of which hot gases, ash, and lava may pour. "Where only yesterday we had been waiting for the right time to plant our crop," the farmer said, "now we saw a flood of fire covering our footsteps' last traces." As more lava poured from the volcano's crater, or opening, and cooled and became hard, the mound grew even higher. Over time, it formed a tall, cone-shaped mountain. In 8 months, the volcano grew to be more than 1,500 feet, 457 meters high. It was named Paricutin. Some mountains, such as Paricutin, form quickly. Most mountains, however, form slowly as forces deep inside the earth push up parts of the surface. Review. How was the way Paricutin formed different from the way most mountains form? Mountains change. When they are new, mountains often have high, pointed peaks. Over the years, however, mountains wear down. Rain, ice, blowing sand, and heat break up the rocks in a mountain. Then water and wind carry away tiny bits of the broken rocks. This erosion causes mountain peaks to get lower and rounder. Most mountains change their shape slowly. A volcano, however, can change a mountain's shape quickly. When a volcano erupts or begins to throw out lava, the blast can tear down the mountain. On May 18, 1980, a small plane was flying near Mount St. Helens, a volcano in the state of Washington. At 8:32 a.m., the pilot and passengers saw the north slope, or side of the mountain, begin to move and slide. Suddenly, the mountain tore open, and a blast of steam, ash, and rock shot out. A worker for the U.S. Forest Service remembers the blast. "There was no sound to it, not a sound. It was like a silent movie, and we were all in it. I could see boulders, they must have been huge, being hurled out of the leading edge, and then being swept up again in the advancing cloud." A cloud of smoke, steam, and ash made the sky dark for miles around. In Yakima, Washington, about 80 miles, 129 kilometers away, the sky was so dark that streetlights went on at noon. On the mountain itself, rocks the size of cars tore down forests. Rock and ash up to 180 feet, 55 meters deep, covered other places. In all, more than 230 square miles, 596 square kilometers of the mountainside were destroyed. The mountaintop was lowered about 1,200 feet, 366 meters. 57 people died. Review. What causes the shapes of most mountains to change? Different mountains. The Appalachian Mountains in the eastern part of the United States are the oldest mountains in North America. Over the years, they have been worn down by erosion. Their peaks are mostly low and rounded. Even the Appalachian's tallest peak, Mount Mitchell in North Carolina, rises just 6,684 feet, 2,037 meters above sea level. This is less than half as high as many peaks in the Rocky Mountains. Yet many scientists believe that the ancient Appalachians were once taller and more rugged than the Rockies. The newer and taller mountains in the United States are all found in the west. The largest are the Rocky Mountains. The Rockies are only about half as old as the Appalachians, but are twice as high. In Colorado alone, more than 50 peaks rise higher than 14,000 feet, 4,267 meters above sea level. As in the Appalachians, some groups of mountains that are part of the Rocky Mountains have their own names. Among these are the Front Range in Colorado and Wyoming, the Teton Range in Wyoming, and the Brooks Range in Alaska. An imaginary line runs north and south along the highest points of the Rocky Mountains. From this line, called the Continental Divide, rivers flow west or east. Most rivers that begin west of the Continental Divide, such as the Yukon, the Columbia, and the Colorado, flow into or reach the Pacific Ocean. Rivers that begin east of the Continental Divide, such as the Missouri and the Rio Grande, flow into the Mississippi River or the Gulf of Mexico to reach the Atlantic Ocean. As you know, other mountain ranges lie west of the Rockies, west of the Great Basin and the Columbia Plateau. Along the Pacific Ocean, from California to Alaska, are the Coast Ranges. Inland, along the California-Nevada border, are the Sierra Nevada. Farther north in the states of Oregon and Washington are the Cascades. Many of the Cascades' peaks are volcanoes. These include Washington's Mount St. Helens and Mount Rainier. Mount Rainier is the tallest peak in the Cascades. Review. How are the Appalachian Mountains different from the Rocky Mountains? Changing climates. In the western mountains, a weather report for one day may predict warm spring showers, sleet, and heavy snow, all for the same area. How is that possible? It can happen because temperatures change with elevation. Temperatures might be as much as 3 degrees Fahrenheit lower for every 1,000 feet, 305 meters higher in elevation. That is why places in the west at different elevations get their own weather reports. While a valley might have warm temperatures and showers, places higher in the mountains might have sleet or even snow. Because the climate on a mountain changes at different elevations, plant and animal life changes too. Trees, such as cottonwoods and pines, grow at lower elevations in the Rocky Mountains. Higher in the mountains, firs and spruces appear. Bears, deer, elk, and many other kinds of animals live among the trees. Near the tops of the mountains, however, no trees grow. The Rockies, like all high mountains, have a distinct timber line. Above this elevation, temperatures are too low for trees to grow. Sure-footed mountain goats and bighorn sheep nibble on the grasses and other small plants that can grow above the timberline. Review. What happens to temperatures as elevation becomes higher? Lesson 1, review. Check understanding. 1. Remember the facts. Into which large body of water do most rivers west of the Continental Divide flow? 2. Recall the main idea. How are mountain ranges in the United States alike, and how are they different? Think critically. 3. Cause and effect. How do you suppose the volcano Paricutin affected the people living nearby? Show what you know. Art activity. Draw a diagram of a high mountain to show how climate and plant and animal life would change with elevation. Make sure you show and label the timber line on your diagram. Lesson 2. Focus. How do mountains affect people's lives? Main idea. Read to find out how mountains have affected transportation and communication in the United States. Vocabulary. Barrier. Transcontinental Railroad. Labor. satellite. People and mountains. The western mountains stand like giant walls across the American West. Those walls have shaped our country's history, and they still affect people's lives today. In some ways, however, people have learned to tame the mountains around them. Exploring the mountains. In 1803, the United States bought the Louisiana Territory from France. This huge area of land stretched from the Mississippi River to the Rocky Mountains. Americans knew very little about this land. They knew even less about the Rocky Mountains or the lands west of them. Was it possible to take a wagon through the Rockies? Was there a water route to the Pacific Ocean? The government sent Meriwether Lewis and William Clark to find out the answers to those questions. Lewis and Clark, with a small group of explorers, left St. Louis, Missouri in May 1804. They spent the summer going up the Missouri River. In the fall, they camped at an Indian village near the Rockies. There they hired a trapper to help them find a way through the mountains. The trapper's wife, Sacagawea, was a Shoshone Indian. She spoke English, so she helped them talk with the Indians they encountered. In the spring, the group reached Sacagawea's homeland. They asked the Shoshone people to trade them horses. At first, the Indians did not want to trade their horses. When Sacagawea stepped forward, however, the chief saw that she was his sister. They had not seen each other for many years. Sacagawea's brother agreed to trade the horses. The Indians also showed the group the way through the mountains. But the journey was hard. Horrid bad going was how one man described it. When the explorers finally reached the Pacific Ocean in November 1805, they were hungry and worn out. Review. What areas did Lewis and Clark explore? Biography. Sacagawea, 1786 to 1812. Sacagawea was a Shoshone woman who served as a guide and talked with the Indians for Lewis and Clark. She helped the explorers survive by showing them such things as which plants could be used as food. During the trip, she gave birth to her first son and carried him with her across the Rockies. Mountain travel. In a few years, pioneers began to cross the Rocky Mountains. Trappers had found other passes that made travel to California and Oregon easier. One group that joined the pioneers moving west was the Mormons. The Mormons were in search of religious freedom. They built Salt Lake City near the Great Salt Lake. The mountains, however, still stood as barriers to travel. A barrier is something that blocks the way or makes it hard to move from place to place. Mountain travel remained slow and dangerous. The passes were often steep. Snowstorms and rock slides could happen at any time. Most pioneers traveled by covered wagon. Their wagons carried all their belongings. One pioneer who made the trip west in the 1840s described people's feelings as they faced the mountains. We had now arrived at a most critical period in our most adventurous journey, and we had many misgivings. We could not anticipate at what moment we might be compelled to abandon our wagons in the mountains, pack our scant supplies upon our poor oxen, and make our way on foot through this terribly rough country as best we could. People wanted a faster and safer way to cross the country. In 1862, Congress agreed to build a transcontinental railroad. It would cross the continent and link the east and west coasts. Two companies, the Union Pacific Railroad and the Central Pacific Railroad, would build the railroad. The Union Pacific would lay tracks west from Omaha, Nebraska, through the Rockies. The Central Pacific would lay tracks east from Sacramento, California, through the Sierra Nevada. To help them pay for building the railroad, the government promised to give each company thousands of acres of land and millions of dollars in loans. The amount each company got, however, depended on how many miles of track it laid, so each company raced to lay the most track. Building railroads through the mountains was hard work. Tracks sometimes had to be laid on narrow ledges around steep mountainsides. Bridges had to be built across deep canyons, and tunnels often had to be dug through or blasted out of some of the mountains. To keep snow off the tracks, the workers had to build wooden roofs over the track in some places. Both companies hired thousands of workers to do this labor or work. Most of the Union Pacific's workers were immigrants from Ireland or other European countries. Most of the Central Pacific's workers were immigrants from China. All the immigrants worked long hours at low pay. The Chinese workers, however, risked great danger to complete the railroad, from hanging on ropes thousands of feet above the ground to using explosives to blast tunnels. On May 10, 1869, the two railroads met at Promontory, Utah. The whole country celebrated as the last spike, a solid gold one, was driven to complete the railroad. A telegram was sent to President Ulysses S. Grant. It said, "The last rail is laid, the last spike is driven. The Pacific Railroad is completed." Poet Bret Hart wrote a poem to celebrate the event. It began, "What was it the engine said, pilots touching, head to head, facing on the single track, half a world behind each back?" With the completion of the Transcontinental Railroad, people and goods could cross the country more easily and less expensively. People could now cross the country in 10 to 12 days by train. For $100, wealthy travelers sat on red plush seats in fancy train cars. For $40, others rode west on hard benches. Review. Why were mountains once barriers to travel? Mountains today. Most mountain regions today have few people compared with other regions. Steep mountain slopes are not well suited for building large cities. For example, the mountain states, Montana, Idaho, Wyoming, Nevada, Utah, and Colorado, have few large cities. The large cities that are there, such as Salt Lake City, Utah, are built in valleys or on plateaus between mountains. Denver, Colorado, the region's largest city, is built on plains that lie just east of the Rocky Mountains. Mountain land is also too steep and rocky for most farming. Most farms are found in lowlands between mountains. Some factories are found there too, but there is less manufacturing in the western mountains than in other parts of the United States. Moving goods through the mountains to faraway markets is just too costly. Mountains also make communication more difficult. Both radio and television reception can be poor because the mountains block signals. Communication satellites, however, can improve reception. A satellite is an object that orbits the Earth. Communication satellites travel high above the Earth so they can send signals over the mountains. Review. Why are there few large cities in mountain regions? Lesson 2 review. Check understanding. 1. Remember the facts. Why is mountain travel easier today than in the past? 2. Recall the main idea. How have mountains affected transportation and communication in the United States? Think critically. 3. Cause and effect. How did the Transcontinental Railroad affect transportation? Show what you know. Simulation activity. Imagine that you are a pioneer traveling to California by covered wagon. List 10 items that you are taking with you. When you reach the mountains, you discover that your wagon is much too heavy. Which 5 of the 10 items would you leave behind? Why? Share your decisions with your classmates. Map and globe skills. Use a road map and a mileage table. 1. Why learn this skill? Imagine that this is the first day of your family's vacation to Colorado. About an hour after you start out, your little brother asks, "How much further do we have to go?" To answer your brother's question, you can use a road map. A road map shows the routes between places, but a road map can also tell you the distances between places. Knowing distances helps people choose the best routes. 2. Understand the process. Study the road map of Colorado on this page. It shows some of the state's major highways and cities. 1. Use the map index to find Denver and Glenwood Springs. Which interstate highway connects the two cities? From Denver, in which direction would you travel to reach Glenwood Springs? To find the distance between Denver and Glenwood Springs, you can use the map scale. 2. Use a ruler or a strip of paper and a pencil to find how far apart Denver and Glenwood Springs are on the map. Then, find the distance between the cities in miles. About how many miles is it from Denver to Glenwood Springs? You can find the driving distance or mileage between places by using special features of road maps. On most road maps, main highways have small numbers next to them. These show the number of miles you would drive between places on the highways. The places are marked by wedges called distance markers. you can look at the map key to see what the distance markers look like. 3. Find the distance markers near Glenwood Springs and Gypsum. What is the number between those two markers? This is the number of miles between Gypsum and Glenwood Springs. Using distance markers is a good way to find the mileage between cities that are close to each other. However, using them to find the mileage between cities that are far apart would take a lot of time. You would have to find the mileage between lots of places and then add all the numbers together. A much easier way to find the mileage between cities is to use a mileage table like the one above. A mileage table gives the number of miles between the listed cities. 4. Find the column labeled Denver at the top of the table. Go down the column until you come to the row labeled Glenwood Springs. What number is in that box? That is the number of miles between the two cities. 5. What is the mileage between Denver and Pueblo? Between Pueblo and Greeley? 3. Think and apply. Work with a partner to plan a trip to 3 different cities in Colorado. Begin your trip in Denver. Use the road map to decide on the routes you will follow. Use the road map and the mileage table to find out the number of miles you will travel between these cities.